Good morning, Kansas City. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday here on KCUR. My name is Russ Simmons, and since I'm sitting here in the host seat, that can only mean one thing, and that is that it's movie day here on Central Standard Friday, and I'm joined today by my fellow critics.
This is Loie Lockerbie with the Kansas City Star, kcactive.com, and suchacritic.com.
And I'm John Tibbetts. I teach film at the University of Kansas.
We're going to be chatting about movies that have opened up over the last month or so here in the Kansas City area, and we want to know what you think. So have you seen a movie that you thought was great, you want to let everybody know about it, or is there one you thought was a real stinker and you want to warn people against it? Let us know. Give us a call at 816-235-2888, or you can send us an email at centerstandard@kcur.org, or you can tweet us, or you can send us a Facebook note. We want to hear from you, so join in on the conversation. Let's start out with probably the number one movie at the box office right now, which is the latest in the Bourne franchise, and this one's called Bourne Legacy.
And the name Bourne actually has very little to do with it. This time around, we have Jeremy Renner as Aaron Cross. We keep looking for Bourne, and there's about maybe 45 minutes or so with an occasional wanted poster or picture of Bourne as we know him with Matt Damon, but otherwise he doesn't figure in the story. No, the baton has been handed off. Jeremy Renner is a machine like so many of the spies we see nowadays. He is relentless because he's hyped up on some kind of a drug. This is a spy thriller on steroids, I guess. I wonder if that bothers anybody while they're watching this film to know that one of the main actions in this film is for him to get his next fix. That's literally true. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it that he's battling? Well, there's some kind of a covert federal program called The Program. That's amazing. And that involves some kind of a drug-related system of actions and for various reasons that the program is killing off its own operatives, which includes Jeremy Renner. The fun thing about this film, or the frustrating thing about this film, depending upon your likes and dislikes, is the setup of the plot. I don't think I've ever seen a film that took so long to get around to telling you what in the world is going on. And I say in the world because you are hopscotching around all of the far-flung capitals of the planet. And no conversation lasts more than a couple of seconds before you cut away to somebody else, before you cut away to another location. And throughout, you're watching Jeremy Renner, for some reason, crossing mountains, the Alps on foot. I got a little impatient at that point, but at the same time, I was amused at how the film seemed determined to keep us off track on what's going on. Now, by the time things resolve, guess what? It's a big chase. And the big chase occupies a major part of the picture. That's a pretty good chase, but the motorcycle aspect goes on way too long. I like Jeremy Renner, but he doesn't give us the more personable quality that Matt Damon could at times. And I, for one, kind of miss that. But at the same time, Jeremy Renner is a relentless pill-popping machine. And so that's pretty impressive as far as that goes. So out of what are we four or five tops? So out of, I'm going to give it 3.5.
3.5 out of 5. Okay. Loie?
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said there. Although I did enjoy that chase. The more it went on and the more outrageous it got, the more I just sat there and kind of laughed and went, all right. You know, this is at least one thing you can follow easily in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I was watching the first 15 minutes, I think they change locations and introduce new characters about 6 times. I remember sitting there and kind of looking down at my watch and thinking, how long has it been? And they've been doing it. And it's only like 15 or 20 minutes in, and you've already got like all these shifts in locations and people. And it's sort of part, you know, reboot of the series, and it's part a spinoff of it, and it's part a sequel because everything's set in motion by Jason Bourne's going rogue on everybody. It's extremely convoluted, but I do think Jeremy Renner is a terrific action hero. He's a good choice to kind of carry on this, although, like John said, he needs a little more personality. Rachel Weisz is a terrific actress, and she's kind of wasted in the role of this doctor who's one of the researchers involved in the medications he's taking. So it's not a bad way to continue the series, but I don't think it's going to excite anybody too much either. So I think 3.5 is fair.
Yeah, you know, this is written and directed by Tony Gilroy, who is responsible for the screenplays for the other Bourne films. So he knows he's got the template down. The only problem is he doesn't quite have the same directing chops as Paul Greengrass, who is responsible for, you know, some of the previous films. And the action sequences, though good, just don't quite have the snap and the pace that we expect from the Bourne movies. And another problem that I had was that there's so much backstory that has to be, you know, laid out for us that it does tend to bog things down a little bit. But it's still intriguing. It still has atmosphere to spare. And I agree that Jeremy Renner is a good action hero.
It is nice to see, however, the camera settle a little bit.
Yes, he doesn't shake it around and try to turn like people sitting at a table talking into an action scene.
Yeah, that's such an artificially way to force feed the pace of a film. I might also say, regrettably, I thought Edward Norton, who I like a lot, is pretty wasted in here too. Not on drugs; he's just wasted as a role.
Yeah, he's a relentlessly nasty bad guy, but you know that's the role that he's given. And, you know, Tony Gilroy is responsible for a terrific movie called Michael Clayton that he wrote and directed. That's not an action flick, so it was much more perhaps in keeping with the style that Tony Gilroy would be better suited for. Still, even though I agree that the movie does have its flaws, that it is pretty good, and on a scale of 5, I would give it 3.5 as well. So we're going to say 3.5. overall for The Bourne Legacy, which is rated PG-13. Has a lot of action, but it's not overly violent to send it into our territory. So for you parents out there, I think you don't need to be too worried about that one. Another movie that opened back on August 10th is one for, let's face it, designed for an older demographic. It's a relationship comic drama called Hope Springs.
I went to see this at a regular public paid screening, and I think I was the youngest person in the audience by about 20 years, which at first I thought was funny, but then I also thought, well, if I like this movie, then it'll prove that it's not as narrowly focused as people automatically assume. Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones play a couple who've been married for 31 years, and they live in Omaha, and, you know, it's a very sort of staid Midwestern lifestyle. I think a lot of people in this part of the country can certainly identify these characters. In fact, I know people like this, and I always have. But they're really stuck in a rut. And she's so unhappy that she basically drags him to Maine to visit a couples therapist, played completely straight by Steve Carell. And it's just about them figuring out what their relationship is now and where they want to go with it. And the strength of it is in the characterization of this couple and the performances. You know Meryl Streep's going to be great. I mean, that's a given. Tommy Lee Jones has spent a lot of time playing the same character over the years, and this is probably the most human I've seen him in a long time. He's not just the grumpy, you know, guy. He's got a soul here and he's got depth and vulnerability, and I really liked this couple. I loved this couple and wanted to see them kind of pull it together. And so I walked out of it probably liking it as much as the people who were sort of more, I suppose, age appropriate to it. And I've been recommending it to people of all ages. So, you know, just give it a chance. And you may not be the target demo, but give it a chance. It's very good. So, you know, I'll give it a 4.
Halfway through the film, I wanted to shoot Tommy Lee Jones.
Really?
Now, this may be my naivete about these kinds of relationships, but his character I found to be mean and nasty. And I mean mean. There are moments in here where you really wonder why in the world Meryl Streep has stayed in this relationship and is continuing to stay in this relationship. And again, I must confess, perhaps it's my naivete, but I found it hard to believe that so beautifully nuanced is her character. Why would she even put up with this jerk? But I also have to confess, I take into this pretty much a hatred of Tommy Lee Jones across the board. Russ and I were talking about this earlier. We bring to it perhaps unwarranted prejudices, but this guy is the worst interview in the history of the media.
He's renowned for that, yeah.
And that's pretty much what you see on screen. I think watching Steve Carell's attempts to get information out of him in the therapy sessions is like us sitting down with him trying to get something out of him on an interview. So, yes, that's a prejudice, and I admit it. I took it into the film. I was not disappointed because that's what I saw on screen. Yeah, Loie, there's a vulnerability finally at last, but at that point you thought that Meryl would have skipped town long since. I'm going to give it just a 2. That's mostly for Meryl.
You know, I have a friend who is a marriage counselor, and she saw this film, and I wanted to get her take on it. And she said something, a couple of things were very interesting. She said that she thought Steve Carell asked 2 questions, which nailed it. He asked Tommy Lee Jones 2 things. One, is this woman worth more to you than your pride? And the second thing is this the best you can do?
Yeah.
And when he's confronted with those questions, he really has to do some real self-examination to see what he can do to help resolve this relationship. Now, given when I say that and I tell you about these questions, this sounds like something that's really a downer. It sounds like a dour movie, but it's very funny. But the humor is not derived out of jokes. It's not derived out of slapstick. The humor comes from the relationships, and the humor comes from the actors. There's one scene that I won't describe, but Meryl Streep and a banana. That is so funny, and it's only because...
But also hard to believe.
Perhaps, but she makes that work, and she gets that laugh, and that's all you need to know. Yeah. And it's all just the actress and what she does with that moment.
Yeah, and the humor is... it's very uncomfortable, but not in the way of a gross-out comedy, but uncomfortable in the fact that it gets at some serious emotional baggage. So,
and I think Steve Carell is quite good in this film. Some people may go into it and there might be some baggage from his previous roles, thinking of him as a comic, that they might not accept him in this role. But I thought he was very good.
I wonder if his willingness to refund half of the fee for the therapy sessions is reflected in the real world of therapists.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that.
Me too.
Yeah. You know, another thing, and I think this really is something that's important, this movie does target a demographic that is very underserved.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an older crowd. They're just not making movies for this demographic anymore. And I was talking to someone who went to see a screening on a Sunday morning, and they said the theater was packed, and it was all people in 50 and up. And so if Hollywood will make movies for this audience, people will respond. A little bit earlier this year, of course, we saw the best exotic Marigold Hotel, which did very, very well worldwide, appealing to an older demographic. I do think that an older demographic is going to enjoy this movie more than a younger demographic, I have to admit. But I think it's important that that Hollywood, you know, realize that this is underserved and they need to make more movies like this for this audience. So I would like to ask the audience out there listening, have you seen Hope Springs? Did it appeal to you? Are you a member of that older demographic we're talking about? And are there other films out there that you have seen that you think will appeal to that demographic too? So give us a call at 816-235-2888 or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. And let us know what you think about that. I think that the film has some flaws. It's not paced particularly well, but because of that terrific cast, I'm going to give it a 3.5. So I think between a 3.5, a 4, and a 2, we can average it out to a 3 out of 5 for Hope Springs. Loie?
I was just, you know, thinking about this, talking to people about Hope Springs and how, you know, Hollywood forgets that, A, people in all age groups have money that they're willing to spend at a movie theater if they want to see something. But there's also this obsession with opening weekends. And movies like Hope Springs tend to have legs. You know, they appeal to people who aren't necessarily insisting on going out Friday night and tackling the crowds to see something. But they're going to see it maybe a week or two later, and they're going to tell all their friends to see it. And the thing will, you know, have a steady box office that ultimately will probably do better than some of these big budget movies that can't make back their marketing.
Yeah, this is the very kind of film I think that would sustain itself like that. I think too, maybe one more question to the listener would be, given the marriage as it's portrayed, if you have seen it, did you believe that events worked out as they did?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I did not, but interesting.
Yeah, you never know. You're listening to KCUR, and this is Central Standard Friday. You can give us a call at 816-235-2888 to join in on the conversation, and that's exactly what Heather did from Gardner. Hi, Heather. Welcome to the conversation. Heather? Heather, are you there? There you are.
Yeah, I'm right here. I've been talking to air. Hi, I was just calling because I'm 30. My husband is also 30, and we we just got the best exotic marigold hotel to watch tonight.
And
you look at the list of actors and the people that are in it, and you know it's going to be good. And on top of that, like I want to see this movie because I love Meryl Streep, and I actually like Tommy Lee Jones. He's quirky in a kind of stupid kind of country kind of way. I like it. But anyways, I just want to say that I haven't seen this film, but I am married, and women stay with men that are jerks because they hope they'll change. And they just put up with a lot of crap for kids' sakes most of the time. This is just for me speaking. Just to answer his question, I have a lot of friends that are married to complete jerks. And it's always a case where a really nice person is married to a complete jerk, and either it's man or woman, it's just the way it works. But secondly, I just wish they would make more movies like this because, you know, like I said, we're 30, and we are so sick of Hangover and Bridesmaid and Gross Out, Judd Apatow, stupid lowest common denominator. My generation makes me want to puke. It's like, seriously, the public school system in this country has failed when the movies that make the most are the ones where your vocabulary is at a third grade level and you don't think higher in political thought, you know, more about, you know, Paris Hilton and what kind of skirt she wears than you know about who's running the country.
Well,
it makes me just want to throw up.
I hate to tell you this, but at age 30, I'm afraid you're already starting to cross the border into that older generation.
This is true. I'm going to be 31 soon. But the truth is, though, that there's a lot of us that are just like, we cannot wait for movies like this that actually like have some reality to show us. And in a weird way, it's kind of, I don't know, I can't wait to see this movie tonight because the movies that they are coming out with now are sick. And the movies that this kind of movie that appeals to this, I don't know, this emotional sense of self, this hope for when I get older, you know, that maybe one day I'll be a golden girl kind of thing. But
that's
anyways,
cool.
Yeah, so just to answer a couple questions, and I'm super excited to see it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to hear from somebody who has. So thank you. Bye.
Thanks for calling,
Heather. I think you'll like this, and you'll like Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. I thought it was great, too.
And you're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. You can join in on the conversation as well by calling 816-235-2888. Or you can send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. And now let's talk about a movie that Heather probably would hate. It's back in that Will Ferrell mode. It's a wild, uproarious comedy called The Campaign, and it earns that R rating.
Well, the comedy is so broad in this. It's kind of like a Mad Magazine gone berserk that I think for about half the film I was kind of with it, and it has some wonderful sequences in it. But these two people vying for the candidacy of an office, two Republicans, by the way, can't help but note that, they are both – so will be gone, hateful or inept, choose one, that you wonder why anybody has kept any of them in office at all or would vote even in this election. But yet nonetheless, they do. Now, that maybe is another comment on the voting public. But man, that thing wore out its welcome for me. And when you have midway through a scene where one of the candidates is trying to seduce the wife of the other, boy, is that smarmy. Man, that's a squirmy kind of sequence. And the movie just, showed a mean streak that kind of corrupted any of the more good-natured comedy and satire that it had. But I'll tell you, there's a dinner table scene where the kids of one of the candidates are asked to recite some of the things that they've been doing that day in school. Your hair will stand on end at that one. And there's also an ongoing set of gags about one of the candidates punching out a baby and is it a cat? I'm trying to remember. Yes, it has its moments, but man, I can't get more than 1.5 stars on The Campaign.
I can certainly understand that, and I do believe that this movie probably pushes the envelope a little too far from time to time, but that's the mode that we're in right now. It's the gross-out comedy. It is a movie that is a cartoonish in the fact that the aspects of a political campaign where two Republican rivals are really going at it It's over the top. But at the same time, boy, if you see the political ads that are on the airwaves today, you think, well, maybe this isn't quite as exaggerated as we may have thought. I think that Will Ferrell delivers his usual Will Ferrell type of performance. But Zach Galifianakis, on the other hand, I thought was very funny. And you, I do believe you're right, John. I think that the sequence with the kids will turn a lot of people off. But there are moments in this movie that are, I think, hilarious, and then there are also moments that are tedious. So I'm going to split the difference and give The Campaign a 3. And what did you give it?
Two and a half. Yeah, more than that, certainly.
We'll average it out to 2.5 for The Campaign, which is rated R. And by the way, we've had people who have contacting us regarding Hope Springs and reaching that older demographic. John has written in and said, I have not yet seen Hope Springs, but I'm part of the demographic. And one of my favorite movies that will appeal to all age groups, but especially aging boomers, is The World's Fastest Indian. And, of course, The World's Fastest Indian is a 2005 New Zealand film.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, about – it was
– Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins, that's right. Mm-hmm. New Zealand speed bike racer Burt Monroe and his highly modified Indian Scout motorcycle. And John in Leadwood says it was a dog that was punched out, not a cat, by the way, in the campaign. And also we have Libby on the line who wanted to chime in on Hope Springs. Hi, Libby.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you for taking the call. I saw Hope Springs on Sunday morning, like some of your other guests, and I loved it. I'm in the demographic. Saw it with a friend of mine also in the demographic. And I thought that Tommy Lee Jones did a superb job. I was a little doubtful about how he would pull it off in this movie, and I was amazed. And, of course, Meryl was great, and I also enjoyed Steve Carell. And I hope other people like the movie. I mean, I'm afraid that these situations and marriages really do happen. And I enjoyed the movie.
Would you say that the movie might be a kind of therapy exercise for couples who go to see it?
Well, let's hope it will wake some of them up.
Yeah. I think that would be interesting if there's a demographic that's primarily feminine or female. I'm not sure. Take your husband with you.
There were a lot of couples at the screening I was at. Yeah.
Let me ask you about follow up with what John was curious about. Now, without giving away the ending, did you find what happened at the end of the movie realistic or not?
Or
did it matter?
Well, I think it was a movie ending. I think things were probably, moving in that direction, but probably not that strongly.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it, Libby.
You're welcome.
Denny writes in and says, my wife and I are 64 and enjoyed Hope Springs. My wife thought it was wonderful. I thought it was very good. I thought Best Exotic Marigold Hotel was a notch above. The movies we've spent our money on have been The Intouchables, To Roam with Love, which we found disappointing, and the coming attractions, which do not have explosions, car chases, and fantasy monsters. Okay.
We might also mention Clint Eastwood's films in the last 7 or 8 years, too, have pretty much explored life from that other end of the spectrum, age spectrum.
He's got another one coming up,
the
Trouble with the Curve or something like that, yeah.
Patrick writes in and says, Happy Friday, movie critics. I appreciate your comments on The Campaign, but I feel that you failed to note the primary reason that this movie fails to live up to expectations. It's because Will Ferrell is just irritating.
Not as irritating as Zach Galifianakis, but there you go.
I know that a lot of people have that same reaction to Will Ferrell. It's a kind of a love it or hate it kind of situation, but he is what he is. And he has a certain style and a knack that either people find hilarious or irritating.
When you watch it, when you go see it, take note of his car. He has an emblem of his face on the window of his car. So when the window goes up, you're still seeing him, sort of. It's weird. It's very funny.
We want you to join in on the conversation after we have a break. So give us a call at 816-235-2888 or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. We want to know, if are you among that older demographic? Do you have some movies that you'd like to recommend? Or is there a movie you'd like to steer people away from? Just let us know. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome aboard, everyone. Once again, this is Central Standard Friday. I'm Russ Simmons, and this is Movie Critics Day here on Central Standard Friday. We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so, and we want to know what you think. So give us a call at 816-235-2888, or you can write us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We've gotten on the topic of movies for an older demographic. If that's something you'd like to chime in on, let us know. Have you seen Hope Springs or Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, or are there some movies that you would recommend that should appeal to an older demographic, or are you among the younger demographic and still like those movies anyway? Just let us know what you think.
Would Neil Young fit into that category?
Yeah, maybe so. That's probably true. I do have a couple of quick announcements before we pick up where we left off, and this is going to be exciting news for film buffs out there who are real purists and love classic movies. Cinemark is presenting the Classic Movie Series, Your Favorite Movies Digitally Restored and on the Big Screen. These are going to be playing at the Cinemark Palace on the Plaza, as well as the Cinemark in Merriam on August 23rd. Our friend Michael Smith will be happy to know they have a big screen version of Jaws.
Is this the new?
This is the digitally
one that they did
remastered
for the Blu-ray, where they? Oh yeah, I've heard good things about it.
And on August 30th, the classic Western High Noon. On September 6th, Dr. Zhivago. And if you haven't had a chance to see that on the big screen, that's the place to see it. September 13th, Chinatown. September 30th, Bridge on the River Kwai. And on September 27th, The African Queen. You can find out more information by going to kcur.org. We'll have information on that on the Cinemark Classic Movie Series. And also, coming up on September 7th through the 9th at the Screenland Crossroads, our colleague Sean Edwards presents the Kansas City Urban Film Festival. And the lineup includes a short film showcase and opening night's KC Soul VIP party at 9 p.m. And there'll be 10 feature-length films in addition to all those shorts. And one of them is The Chicago 8, which is about the court proceedings against the famous anti-war protesters at the 1968 Democratic Convention. And a movie called Dorothy and the Witches of Oz, which is a fantasy that imagines Dorothy as an adult writer of the fictional Oz stories. She learns, however, that the stories she's written are actually repressed memories, and that the Witches of Oz have nefarious plans for our side of the rainbow. So that and a lot of other movies at the Urban Film Festival. And quickly, John, I think you had a quick announcement for us as well, did you not?
Well, actually, I was just going to mention something about the Oz thing. If you've read the Oz books, you know that not far into the series, the people of Oz decided that entirely too many people were invading their precincts. So they established a kind of force field or invisible barrier around the entire world of Oz so that nobody could get in. Would that the filmmakers and the playwrights and the writers and everybody else had obeyed that injunction.
Yes. Oh, well.
I also might mention, however, that the 20th Buster Keaton Festival is coming up in late September at Iola, Kansas. Special guest is Kevin Brownlow, the Oscar-winning film preservationist and historian. He will be there making a return engagement. That's very exciting for a lot of us.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for that. And we have a lot of people that want to chime in and join the conversation about this older demographic, in particular, Hope Springs. And here's Stan from Kansas City. Hi, Stan.
Good morning.
And you saw the film?
I did. Went with it with my wife. We saw the few blurbs that came out beforehand and could hardly wait to get to see it. We had also gone to see the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Loved that. But I just saw a lot of myself in the Tommy Lee Jones character, in, I guess, in terms of my wife trying to get pull things out of me is like getting, it's very difficult. And I thought his character was sort of believable, having been married for over 50 years, and
well, that's why I've
gone through a lot of that.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if watching the film might be a bit of a therapy in itself.
I really thought so. I liked the ending.
Okay.
I thought that here's a man who's finally coming to grips with he's probably a good part of the problem.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
Stan, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And here's somebody who has a completely different perspective. We have Dorothy from Kansas City who did not like Hope Springs. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello.
Let us know what you thought.
Well, I thought the film, the acting was brilliant. Tommy Lee Jones was fabulous. But I thought the film was very tedious. I mean, I could have left in the middle of it and felt like I missed nothing.
The film was very what?
Tedious.
Tedious.
And what did you think about the ending as well? We were kind of started.
Don't say
on,
too much, though.
Yeah.
I thought the ending was, appropriate perhaps for the film, and I think it would be a great film for marriage therapy, but for enjoyment, no.
It'd be interesting to see the film with the roles reversed.
Maybe so.
Thanks so much, Dorothy. Appreciate your call.
Speaking
of the older demographic, we have Cynthia on board who wants to tell us about a movie called It's Complicated. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. Listen, could we change the older demographic to the demographic of 39 and holding?
Okay, I'll go with that.
I mean, just a suggestion.
That's good. Okay.
I loved It's Complicated because it showed that romance can occur after the age of 50, and thought it was well done, well acted, and it was just, to me, a flawless movie. And I have a suggestion about maybe teaching Hollywood to produce more movies of this type. Now, I don't tweet, and maybe I should learn to tweet, but I'm thinking if we were to tweet our reaction to these quality movies, and that perhaps they can recognize, oh, yes, there is an audience out there, and maybe they'll stop giving multi-million-dollar budgets to 20-year-olds who think a movie is a video game.
Oh.
Good point.
Beautiful.
I'm
yeah.
still back with why we would want to tweet in the first place.
Well, you know what? They trend. I mean, I hate to admit this, but a lot of major decisions are being made by people looking at the tweeting trends.
That's true.
Facebook is
embarrassing, but that's how things are now.
Facebook is already declining, so it's only a matter of time.
And it's interesting that It's Complicated is another Meryl Streep film.
Yes, and it was just so beautifully shot, and the characters were fully developed, and it was not a Hollywood ending. It was a more of a realistic ending. And then the movie was packed with various aged people when I went to go see with some friends, and that is a demographic that needs to be courted, but we have to respond. We can't just do it by going to the movie and not say anything. We need to go to the movie and acknowledge our presence and give Hollywood indication of the amount of money that they're missing.
You are preaching to the choir.
Okay, fine.
But could I suggest we're ignoring one basic fact? All of the people I talk to in this 39 and holding, they're going to stay home with Netflix.
Not necessarily.
I heard it just this morning.
These packed theaters, people are buying those tickets.
I don't think so. I disagree.
They'll go if you give them something to watch.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your call, Cynthia. Barb writes in about Hope Springs and says, it's real life in so many ways. I am 60 years old, and I know so many couples like this. Saw it with a 36-year-old who is married and raising two kids, and even she related to it. I am so desperate for movies like this. I used to go to the movies twice and sometimes three times a week, and the last several movies I saw were The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and some other indie films. Interesting side note, saw Meryl on Charlie Rose, and she said that she insisted this movie come out in August instead of Christmas because women are too busy around Christmas. Also read that Jeff Bridges was the first choice for this movie. Interesting. Incidentally, we also had someone write in. Stephen in Kansas City wants to know if we know the opening date for Lay the Favorite. Does anyone know? Favorite. Lady the Favorite?
The title sounds familiar, but I don't know anything else.
Sorry, don't know about that one, Stephen. But speaking of demographics, here's somebody who wants to talk about a movie that appeals to a younger demographic. Brenda in Shawnee is calling about Wimpy Kid Dog Days. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I'm actually in that 39 and holding demographic, but I happen to have younger children, and we recently went and saw Diary of a Wimpy Kid Dog Days with my husband and I and my 9-year-old, 10-year-old, and 6-year-old. My 9-year-old and 10-year-old loved it and laughed through the whole thing. My husband and I and my 6-year-old were excruciatingly bored. My 6-year-old actually asked to play my phone for the entire movie because he was so miserable.
Wow. I understand, you know.
Talk about target demographics.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, this is.
If you're 9 or 10, it's good. Everyone else, save it for the rental.
You are so right. I saw this movie, and I saw the other two, and took my godson, who happens to love those books, and the books are very clever, frankly. But the movies are kind of cliched, and this in particular, I thought, was the weakest of the three.
Does this one carry through the use of the drawings, which I thought was one of the best things about
To some extent, series? Yes. Mm-hmm. To some extent, yes. But I think Brenda is right. I don't think this is a movie that will particularly appeal to anyone beyond the strict target demographic of those kids.
And I'm not sure my kids would have loved it if they hadn't read the books. I think they liked seeing what they had already read come to life on the screen. But I think if they hadn't read the books, it might not have appealed to them very much either.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brenda. Appreciate your call. Gene in Parkville writes, my husband and I really enjoyed Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, but we also enjoyed Moonrise Kingdom. It was a sweet, funny, nostalgic film that took us both back to our youth in the 60s. It was fun seeing Ed Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, and Bruce Willis in such different lighthearted roles, although the two child actors stole the movie was a fun escape for us.
Yes, and I heartily applaud that. That and Beasts of the Southern Wild are the two best films I've seen really in quite a long time. Totally different.
True.
In nature.
Now, Al has called in, and he wants to talk about a movie that we talked about, I believe, the last time we were on, Headhunters. Hi, Al.
Hi, guys. Headhunter is not anywhere close to what people might think it is. It's kind of like cashing in on the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo kind of idea or genre, but it is kind of a farce. Reminds me of the early Coen films. It's just this very bizarre, violent farce, and it left people pretty much laughing and laughing at the movie, not just laughing with it. In at least the audience I was with, including myself, it has some elements of, you know, chic, good taste kind of thing. You know, Euro quality, but it is a really rough cut of a movie that could have been really spectacular. I just thought I'd share that with everybody.
Hey, appreciate that, Al, so much.
Yeah, we still got some new things to cover.
Mm-hmm. And now Suzanne recommends that the older demographic take a look at In the Valley of Elah.
That's his best film.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones and Susan Sarandon have such a trust. Jones had a quiet, nuanced competence that manages to hang on to his integrity when paired with the pretty cop, Charlize Theron, probably one of the best anti-war movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
Of course, that one's out on DVD, so if you want to check out In the Valley of Elah. Let's jump back into some of the movies that need to cover before the end of the hour here. Let's talk quickly about one called Clown, which is playing at the Alamo Drafthouse. Loie?
This is a Danish comedy. You think it's only, you know, Lars von Trier and the Dogma 95? Oh, no, no, no. They can do The Hangover and Jackass, too. I gather it's based on a popular television series. And I won't try to pronounce the names of the actors, but they're, I gather, quite well known in Denmark. And one of them is has discovered that his girlfriend is pregnant, and she thinks he is just too irresponsible and shiftless to be a father. So in order to prove himself, he decides to take his young nephew on a canoeing trip that he's already planned with his best friend. Well, the problem is the best friend is this total horn dog who basically just wants to use this trip to get drunk and get women. And so here these guys are with this kid who's sort of a sad sack, nerdy kid who's always being picked on and so on. And they have to figure out how to keep him relatively safe and still enjoy themselves and prove that this guy is worthy of fatherhood. Let's just say they're not great at it. I was talking to the guys before about if this had been in English, I probably wouldn't have liked it. But I somehow having it in a foreign language makes it more tolerable. And also, there's a very deadpan kind of humor here. In many ways, it's like movies like The Hangover, where it's just completely outrageous and ridiculous and raunchy. But I think the fact that they do it in such a straight-faced manner and it's not it doesn't feel as desperate as some of the comedies that you see coming out of Hollywood. But it is still way over the top. I'll give it 3.
Does way over the top mean raunchy?
Oh, that and, yeah, raunchy and disgusting.
Way over the top, yes. In many ways, yeah. I do think this movie does go too far, and there are some scenes that could even be argued to be pornographic. So I won't get into any more than that. I do think it was smart. And the actors are good, but I probably only be able to give it a 2.5. And what did you give it?
3. 3.
So we'll go ahead and say 3 for Clown, which is rated R, but it's kind of pushes the boundary a little bit. And let's go ahead, John, if you would, quickly to cover a science fiction film, Total Recall.
Well, I may be one of the few that really liked it. I know some critics have, but the public reactions I've gotten have been pretty negative. It is a movie that is eaten alive by chases. Chases, chases, more chases. It is relentless in that, and that could get, ironically, a little tedious and boring. But this is one of the most fantastic designed films I've seen in a long time. We're dealing with a futuristic world. This makes Blade Runner look like a box of Lincoln Logs. This city, as it's imagined and visualized, is amazing. Scene after scene after scene. It steals your attention away from the chase. And in the meantime, you've got Colin Farrell as a factory worker who finds out as a result of a visit to the recall machine that he is dredging up past memories of his real identity, which had been unknown to him, that he is a government operative and people are out to get him. I'd love to see a movie about a government operative where the government itself is not out to get him. You know, just let the bad guys be bad guys somewhere else. And so he's looking for an identity. And the movie is so frantic and so frenetic that in a way, I think it complements the theme, because we do live in a world where we do kind of wonder who the heck we are, because we're surrounded by a mirrored universe of screens and cyberspaces and everything else, and it could be easy to forget just who we are, and his chase throughout the film could be seen as a metaphor for trying to figure out that very basic kind of thing.
So what would your rating be?
So I'm going to give it a 3.5, close to a 4. The set design is, I think, worth the price of the ticket right there.
Okay, and that's Total Recall, which is rated PG-13. And there's a movie that opens today. Oh, no, actually, excuse me, it opened on Wednesday, oddly enough. It's a Disney family film, very sweet-natured and sentimental movie called The Odd Life of Timothy Green. Loie?
Sweet-natured, sentimental, deeply weird, mostly nonsensical. oddly enough, one of the producers and I guess the person who came up with the story is Ahmet Zappa, Frank Zappa's son. So it explains the weird part, but not so much the schmaltzy sentimental part. Jennifer Garner and Joel Edgerton play this very nice couple who've been trying to have a child and have not been able to. And they decide, as a way of sort of getting over their grief, they start writing down the qualities they think their child would have, and then they sort of symbolically bury it, these papers, in their garden. Well, the next day, this little boy who's about 10 years old shows up, claiming to be their son, and he has leaves growing out of around the bottom of his legs for some reason. And he, of course, transforms everyone's lives, and, you know, he's sort of angelic. I love the kid who plays him. I can't remember his name. But, he's got this sort of beatific quality about him. He's very cute.
C.J. Adams is the actor's name.
And I love, you know, Jennifer Garner and Joel Edgerton are both really very good in this. And, you know, you sympathize with them, but the movie is so, odd is a good word to include in the title.
It is.
It's just... it's supposed to be obviously some kind of fable or fairy tale, but there are aspects of it that are so rooted in reality that you never know, you know, where it's supposed to land. Is it a fable? Is it a fairy tale? It certainly has those elements, but then you've also got things like, you know, being unable to conceive or being threatened with joblessness and things like that, which are very much part of the real world. And the combination just clashes badly. And of course, it is incredibly gooey, and but in a way that does not feel authentic at all, I don't think. As much as I thought the performances were good and the characters were likable, none of it felt emotionally real, you know, fantasy storytelling or no. So I'll give it like a 2.5.
It's interesting, Loie, though, that fairy tales invariably do grow out of a harsh, may I say, grim.
Yes, they do.
World. That's the world that
But they tend to be
them.
More symbolic, you yeah. know. They're not rooted in so much in actual human activity.
This is written and directed by a very talented filmmaker named Peter Hedges, who's responsible for What's Up with Gilbert Grape, and he also wrote and directed Pieces of April and Dan in Real Life. So he's really talented. But I do think you're right. I think he went over a little bit too much into the Hallmark Channel sentimentality with this one. I think I liked it a little bit better than you did, so I'll give it a 3. So we'll say, is 3
okay,
acceptable
sure,
for the two of us there for The Odd Life of Timothy Green, rated PG. And also wanted to let you know that Sean in Midtown writes, there are two issues with making movies for older people that I think affect how a few of those movies are made. The older you are, the more movies you've seen and the more discriminating your tastes become generally. So not only does the subject matter have to be of interest to people over 40, which is tough enough, the movie also has to just be plain better, and making a good movie isn't easy. Well, that's true enough. Let's also talk about a movie that opens today, a documentary called Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating documentary about Ai Weiwei, who is an artist and activist in China. And, you know, he gets continually harassed by the Chinese government. He's been detained. He's been assaulted by the police. But the guy is just fearless, or he seems fearless. And, you know, he's a big supporter of other dissidents. He's got a pretty sizable following in China and certainly internationally. And he's just an extraordinary figure. The movie follows him, it seems, about the course of maybe a year or so. His studio, his assistants, his family. And he photographs everything and takes video of everything. So a lot of this is stuff that he and his assistants have videoed. And he's so provocative and just loves to kind of jab at the regime in China. But he does it – part of it is this sort of impish – he seems to love the drama, the being kind of a provocateur. But, you know, there's a real patriotism too. I mean, he loves his country and he – wants it to be what it could be and live up to its promise, which any true patriot would. And that's really his primary motivation, and he's willing to risk everything for it. But he's so funny, and he's so just in your face, and you just end up admiring this guy so, so much. He's a true hero, and I think he should be an inspiration for anybody, you know, pushing back against oppression. So,
yeah, and I wonder if this will give a global visibility to this person that might
so.
In turn maybe help him a little bit in being protected against mm-hmm. the authorities there.
Yeah,
it
you
seems
know,
to help a little already. Yeah.
The movie itself is competently made, although it's not a great documentary by any
right.
stretch of the imagination. But what makes it work is the dynamic personality of Ai Weiwei, as well as just the fascinating story. Just seeing it unfold makes that movie that much more interesting. So what was your rating?
I'll give it a 4.
I'm giving it a 4, too. So that's Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, which is rated R for I don't know for sure why.
Language.
A few words.
Yeah. They dropped the Chinese version of the F-bomb
that's
pretty
right.
regularly.
And that does have to be translated and it has to be up on the screen. So there you go. So that's Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, rated R. Also wanted to touch base really quickly on a couple of movies that opened today that I know people are interested in, and that is Sparkle, which is rated PG-13, a remake of the very popular cult classic film from the 1970s. It's about a young wannabe singer. Jordan Sparks plays the lead role, and Whitney Houston in her final role plays her disapproving mom. The music is terrific. You know, the old Curtis Mayfield tunes added with some by R. Kelly to the soundtrack. Two problems I had with this movie, though. The drama is just really turgid. And secondly, why did we have to wait until the finale of this movie to hear Jordan Sparks sing a song? I mean, she's the American Idol winner. This is why we're going to see this movie, to hear her sing, and we don't hear a complete song until the end of the movie. So I'm only going to be able to give it a 2.5. And I also wanted to touch on Paranorman, which is a stop-motion animation film that many kids will want to see, and the visuals are absolutely spectacular. Unfortunately, you know, even though that the visuals are first rate, I'm afraid that the script is strictly second rate. So I'm only going to be able to give Paranorman a 3, and it's rated PG.
Now, we might mention, too, that Ruby Sparks is kind of a latter-day version of Timothy Green, because you have an invented character.
Right.
But we've seen that kind of plot so many times in Stephen King and elsewhere. Except for Zoe Kazan being a diverting presence on screen, it really doesn't have much else to offer.
I'm giving it a 4. What would you give it?
Whoa, gosh, I wish we had more time. I was going to give it just a 2.5.
Yeah, I think of it as almost a companion piece to Hope Springs, because it's about relationships and what you expect from them and so on. But yeah.
Thank you for joining us today, and join Jabalani LaFall and the Cash Money crew on Central Standard Monday. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, and our announcer is Kim Noble. And my thanks to my fellow movie critics today, Louie Lockerbie and John Tibbetts. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and this is Central Standard Friday. Enjoy your day.